More than a decade after the Gulf War, the unexplained illnesses from that conflict remain a concern for veterans, a sore spot for the military, and a politically charged issue. Numerous expert reports have called for an overhaul of the way the military tracks health and environmental hazards during deployments to avoid a similar mess in future conflicts. As NPR's Richard Harris reports, the military is starting to change its ways.
Here's the backpack of the soldier of the future. It contains no bullets, no grenades, no bayonet.
What it contains is everything you would need to do soil samples and water samples in the field combined, plus some of the material you need to do air sampling with.
Jack Heller is rifling through this black nylon rucksack at the Army's Aberdeen Proving Grounds in Maryland. It will soon be deployed to some undisclosed military hotspot.
Some of the other things that it contains is stainless steel bowls, you know, for mixing your soil samples. Socket wrenches, you know, you never know when you may need to fix something. A little mini weather station that gives you temperature, relative humidity, other information you may need to use when you're collecting your samples.
Looks about the size of a stopwatch.
It is about the size of a stopwatch.
These days, the Army is trying to keep tabs on the environment wherever soldiers go. Dr. Colleen Weiss at the Army's Center for Health Promotion and Preventive Medicine at Aberdeen says as war has changed, so have the risks.
There was an old saying that the exposure of concern is lead from a flying bullet, not from a low-level exposure.
But on battlefields these days, flying lead doesn't claim many American lives, so the military has more time to worry about risks typical of modern living, such as low levels of chemicals lurking in the water or air or the soil, which may not cause any symptoms for years or decades after the fact.
And so increasingly, we have to look at any potential exposure that might have occurred on a deployment and try to get information about that, which is a rather large job.
It's a job now being demanded of the military following the Gulf War. Thousands of veterans develop symptoms ranging from fatigue and joint pain to memory trouble. And the military never did figure out whether these problems were triggered by something in the Gulf environment, as many veterans believed. Jack Heller says the first guess turned out to be wrong.
You know, the one big thing everybody saw on CNN and thought we were going to have to be concerned with is oil fire exposure. So one of the unfortunate things is that's what we keyed on collecting data for. And as more things became apparent that could have been a potential, it's unfortunate that in a lot of cases that data wasn't collected.
The list is very long, but it includes who got anthrax vaccines, who took a nerve gas preventive nicknamed PB, who got exposed to a lot of insect repellent, and who might have come in contact with depleted uranium from armor-piercing projectiles. To explain how he attempted to examine worries about uranium, Heller heads to a file cabinet that's sitting forlornly in the back of a warehouse.
I've always been a pack rat and kept things probably longer than I should have.
Heller and his colleagues collected 300 jars of sand in Iraq and Kuwait.
Here's a familiar one from the Iraqi tank yard in 1996.
The Iraqi tank yard was the dumping ground for thousands of burned-out Iraqi vehicles. Some of the tanks had been destroyed by projectiles made from depleted uranium, which is very dense and slightly radioactive. By studying the sand collected from this area, Heller found that the uranium did not get airborne, so it probably didn't pose a hazard to American soldiers. But he knows that's not the ideal way to study a potential health threat.
You know, it's one thing to collect samples in the environment and then try to extrapolate what their exposure is. Something else if you can actually measure the contaminant in a soldier's blood or urine.
In fact, the Army is laying the groundwork for exactly those kinds of studies at a facility stashed in an industrial park about an hour's drive from Aberdeen in Silver Spring, Maryland. This is the domain of Mark Rubertone, a physician in charge of the Army's medical surveillance activity.
Our ideal worker is kind of a cross between a polar bear and an accountant.
And the reasons for that quickly become obvious as Dr. Rubertone heads toward a gleaming stainless steel freezer door, behind which lies the nation's biggest collection of blood plasma.
Each of the specimens are maintained in precisely documented locations within the freezer. It's going to be a little cold. This one's minus 29 degrees Celsius. But just to show you quickly,
you
He slides a slim cardboard box off a shelf and pulls out a small glass vial with yellowish ice inside it. Boxes of vials like this stretch in all directions. Dr. Rubertone figures there are 3 miles of shelf space in this freezer and a dozen companions.
We've got, right now, about 27.5 million specimens, and we grow at about 2.2 million specimens a year.
Dr. Rubertone walks past a few of the polar bear accountants who are processing the latest batch of samples, 400,000 in this load. The blood is drawn from every member of the military for routine AIDS surveillance, but kept as a valuable resource for medical research.
I'll bring you into a warm freezer. You can see this one has no specimens.
In this comfortable spot, Dr. Rubertone explains that the repository's samples are currently used to study everything from testicular cancer to the rate of hepatitis C among Gulf War vets. And next time something like Gulf War illnesses crop up, the military will have a lot more information to go on. But blood samples only help if the Army knows where that soldier has been. The General Accounting Office has found that the military still has trouble keeping track of where troops are and what medical problems they have in the field. Medical records tend to get written on paper, and they tend to get lost. So the Army is starting to computerize that.
Today we capture all the inpatient and outpatient data that occurs in the theaters in Bosnia and Kosovo. That's not to say we're capturing things that are occurring in Afghanistan. We're not, because it's a little bit harder when you first get into an operation to have the kinds of systems and infrastructure in place in order to allow that. So there is still a lot of paper records that we are contending with. But I think there's been overall improvements, and we've got a little bit of work ahead of us.
In an ideal world, if you had been doing this a decade ago, would we have had answers about Gulf War syndrome, do you think?
I'm not sure we ever would have had answers, because there's a lot of reasons why I think Gulf War syndrome and others like that occur. But I think what we would have been better positioned to do is to have quicker answers to some of the concerns of individuals.
Back at the Aberdeen Proving Grounds, Dr. Colleen Weiss says the effort is still worthwhile. These days, environmental teams scout ahead before big deployments so the armed forces can try, when possible, to avoid sites where there are potential health hazards.
It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to be near a lead smelter if you could go somewhere else. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to be near a runway where the ground looks like there's some sort of sludge or oil spills or things like that. And so that really, I think, is the most practical outcome so far, that we've tried to, you know, use common sense up front to eliminate areas where potential exposures would exist.
Dr. Weiss says avoiding spots like these won't necessarily prevent another Gulf War syndrome. She notes that soldiers have returned from every major war with a similar spectrum of symptoms, and it's not clear that the cause was in the physical environment. But she says at least they need to try. Richard Harris, NPR News.